It's the Leading on Purpose podcast, helping leaders, teams, and organizations lead more intentionally, effectively, and with purpose. Welcome back. Thanks for tuning in. It's part two of Doug and I defining emotional intelligence. Enjoy. Let's dig right in. We've kind of tossed out a few ideas in terms of the various competencies and maybe buckets that emotional intelligence is broken up between. How do we get folks a clear understanding of what you and I mean when we talk about emotional intelligence and the competencies that they might take a look at working on?
You bet. And, you know, we've mentioned Dan Goleman several times. And again, if there was just one book you're going to read on emotional intelligence, it was published in the mid 90s, yeah. But it's called Emotional Intelligence. And there's a subtitle around it. I don't have it here in front of me right now, but I would get that. And even for Goleman, the way he defines emotional intelligence and the competencies that live, those have evolved over these past, you know, 20, 25 years as well. And so to me, the most helpful model, if you can visualize this, is you think about what is emotional intelligence and what competencies make up emotional intelligence. I've always found it helpful that Goleman thought about it in two major buckets. One bucket is all about you and self. And the other bucket is about others.
Yeah.
And so if you think about self, one of the most important EI competencies is self-awareness, just awareness of self. And later on in the conversation, we'll talk a little bit about how can someone become more aware of the impact that they're having and how others perceive them. But it's really about self-awareness, understanding myself. What are my tendencies? What are my triggers? What are my hot buttons? What are things that I just know about me that's what serves me well? And what are those things that I know about me that get in the way at times? So that's what we mean by self-awareness. And I always think that is the really important starting point with folks. But then he goes on to talk about this other bucket called self-management. And self-management is, how good a job do I do in managing not just my emotions, but my behaviors that flow out of those emotions? Yep. So I remember one time, probably one of the most challenging coaching relationships I was ever involved in, very senior leader in an organization who was known for just being very blunt, brutal. I mean, he would even bloody people in meetings. I probably shouldn't even use that. There's a demonstration of emotional intelligence. In this day and age, a different term would be more appropriate. But I observed him one time in a meeting with his staff, and it was just the way he would shut people down, and it was not good. And so afterwards, we debriefed, and I just gave him my feedback. And he was nodding his head. He said, you know, I've always known that about myself. I'm very blunt. I do have a bit of a temper. I do get upset easily. So I was like, oh, okay, so there is some self-awareness. So let's check that box. But then he went on to say, but that's just who I am. And it's like, okay. So the self-management piece. Yeah. Good self-awareness. He knows he has these challenges and issues, but he was not at all interested, or did he even take ownership of managing that in himself?
Yep.
When it was getting in the way. So that self-management, that self-control is a big part of your self-journey with emotional intelligence.
Yep.
So anything that you would add to that, John, before we kind of take a look at
what it
relating to others?
Yeah, thanks. What it makes me think of is just, you know, again, going back to Goleman's construct, but certainly how I work with leaders on this is, as we look at these competency buckets, self-awareness, self-management, you know, and then in relation to others, they all build on each other. and they all work together. And so being good at just one of these areas, to your example, your story there, isn't quite enough. And so pay close attention to that as you kind of listen to us map these out. They all build on each other and they need each other to be effective. Because, by the way, there's another version of self-awareness that isn't about, you know, your story was about, hey, maybe lacking some regulation under the self-management bucket. It's like, I'm aware of this, but I'm not doing anything about it. I've seen the opposite be true, where someone is self-aware and self-aware only, but so self-aware that it starts to damage their self-esteem. And so they actually go the other way. They don't speak up as much as they should. They talk themselves out of, you know, making a bold statement, taking a stand on their beliefs. And it's a self-confidence issue. And so to me, there, you know, it can go in multiple directions, but self-awareness to me sometimes is only as good as your self-management. What am I doing with that information? I look in the mirror. Okay, great. I see this blemish in the mirror. What am I doing about it? And so these components really have to work together to produce emotional intelligence.
Yeah, that's a great insight. And as you're sharing that, I was in my mind going back to that coaching client that I was just talking about. We talked about his temper and his tendency to get angered easily. And where his mind went then was to the other extreme. And I can't remember the exact language, John, but it was something of, oh, okay, so you're going to help me learn how to be nice to people. And he also interpreted meaning, if I'm upset, then it's not appropriate for me to express that I'm upset. It's like, no, it's how, it's when. Expressing being upset with another human being and doing it appropriately takes emotional intelligence. So it's not, I think I mentioned in the opening comments, emotional intelligence isn't going around just being nice to people all the time.
Right.
It's between the self-awareness that leads into the self-management. It's reading the situation, the relationship I'm in. It's knowing myself, knowing what's the best way in this moment for me to show up in an effective way. So for example, for me, John, one of the things I know about me is I do have certain triggers. And over the years, I've gotten better at controlling those. But I would like to think in most situations, if I find myself almost feeling like I'm about to get out of control, either in the words that I say or my tone of voice or the harshness, and it's like that is not going to help this situation, this relationship, an emotionally intelligent response can be to just simply own that, notice it, and even take a time out.
Yep.
Be like me saying to you, John, I am just finding myself right now. I just getting so worked up. I need to have a pause right now so you and I can have a productive conversation versus just letting it flow and letting it go.
Yeah.
You get it out on the table, but what damage is it going to do to the relationship and how productive is it going to be in advancing this conversation that we're having? So I love the way you frame that. It's those two building upon each other in harmony is just so important.
Yeah. Yeah. And your authenticity, I think, is pointed to yet again in what you just said, that for me not to say something right now and just shut down, well, that's not authentically me, how I'm feeling right now. And so one of the things I end up coaching leaders on from time to time in terms of increasing the success they're having in meetings and in conversations is, yeah, don't just sit on your truth because, you know, you're trying to overly self-regulate. Maybe put a wrapper around what you're going to say. Take a time out. Tell someone, hey, I'm not sure why this just occurred to me. Here it is. And those little moments that demonstrate to others, you're going to say something that's your truth, that's authentic to how you're feeling or where you're at right now. But you're also being mindful of how it might land for people, and you're intending to manage that perception. That goes a long way for people to both hear your truth and hear you say something that is evidence that you're aware of how this might land for people.
Yeah. And great insight.
Yeah.
Well, the other element of this that Goleman and others talk about is moving from self to others. And so just like you have your own personal self-awareness, Goleman even talks about the need to have awareness of others. And there are two competencies that he'll refer to. One is the competency of empathy. And we've talked about empathy before at that individual level and really relating and understanding to the emotion, the feeling that somebody's having, not sitting in judgment of it, just accepting. It's their truth, it's their reality, not judging it. And then the other element of social awareness with others is more of a macro, and it's that sense of organizational awareness, organizational savvy.
Yep.
It's the way I like to describe it, it's the ability to read the room. Yep. It's sitting in that meeting that we've been in, and it's palpable. You feel it. It's like, what's going on here right now? Sometimes that can be positive energy. It's like, oh my gosh, that idea, that comment that was just made has just ignited this room. I feel the energy. I feel the collaboration. Versus an idea that's tossed out on the table and there's this wah, wah, yeah. And it just sucks the air out of the room. Yeah. And it's like, wow, what's going on here? And emotional intelligence is the ability, one, to notice it and be conscious of it. And then depending on the circumstance and your relationship with the people, if it's a one-on-one conversation in a group, what do you do with it? How do you manage through that?
Yes.
It's being in a meeting where maybe it's one of those kind of downer moments or ideas, and you just call it out and say, it can be something as simple as, I'll just speak for myself, but right now I'm feeling some apprehension around this conversation that we've just had for the last 2 minutes. And that's alarming to me. Is anybody else sharing that same feeling around this idea? And then you just let it sit in the room. Now that can take some courage. If that kind of language is not typical for you or comfortable, those are the types of skills that can be learned. But it's going from self to noticing on what's going on for either individuals or the collective group. And that can be a challenging skill.
It is. Yeah. Here's a scary notion for all you leaders out there. Part of your job description, and maybe it's not on the paper that you signed when you joined the organization, is to manage the mood of the organization. And so being able to, as you say, Doug, read the room, pay attention to what's not being said, manage some of those very palpable emotions around what's going on in the organization. Some of this for me branches over to change leadership. Mm-hmm. And to me, the difference between change management and change leadership, because for me, change management is, okay, what's the communication plan, the deployment structure, right. You know, when are we going to market with this, blah, blah, blah. It's the project process side of it, which you have to have. What's so often missed is the leadership side of it, the change leadership side. And that's all about managing the mood. How are people feeling about this change? Because nothing will stop a great idea deader in its tracks than a lack of buy-in and excitement. And so being able to read that and understand, where do people kind of sit with this? How can we create a space where we can, you know, make it okay to talk about how people are feeling, talk about resistance? And so to me, it's a big piece that can serve you well in change leadership situations, which I think all leaders face in today's day and age, is the need to manage the mood of their teams as change is taking place.
Well, John, as you were describing that, I'm almost embarrassed to say this out loud. It was a tough lesson to learn over the years. I wish I'd learned it earlier in my career. Is the number of times that like an idea will be developed that makes a lot of business sense. And this goes to your whole issue of the difference between change management and change leadership. And as you're looking at the X's and O's and the ROIs and the numerics and the metrics and the competitive landscape, it's all just brilliant. And it's a very rational thinking process that oftentimes is devoid of really appreciating and understanding the human element in reaction to the idea. And that's what you just described there. So if you're sitting in a meeting and you're introducing a new idea to your team or a group of colleagues or whatever, and you've already thought through it, and you might have even been through a bit of the emotional roller coaster that you go through with new ideas, but that's that reading of the room. It's not just telling them, here it is, here's why we're doing it, here are the numbers, here's what we could expect. Makes total sense to me. Now let's go do it. It's creating that space and opportunity for the emotional response to the idea. And unfortunately, that gets missed sometimes. And even more unfortunately, people that have an emotional reaction to it are sometimes labeled. And it's like, well, I thought you were a team player, John.
Right.
This idea makes John, you just aren't open to change, are you?
Yep.
It's like, no, I'm open to change. I'm just kind of trying to get through this, both in my head and in my heart and the emotional response to it. So thanks for bringing that up, because I think that with all the change that goes on inside organizations these days, emotional intelligence is a key element of handling that well.
Yeah. I'll go out on a limb and take that a step further. I think if you put two leaders side by side and put them in a situation where they needed to implement some change, a leader who comes up with, let's say, a PhD level solution, just intellectually, it's like, you know, knock your socks off. The X's and O's just blow your mind, but fails to manage the mood and the emotional undercurrents related to that. Not meeting people where they are, not taking a look at, you know, the reactions, the resistance, the emotions that the team may have, versus a leader who comes up with kind of mediocre ideas. Intellectually, they're just kind of back of the napkin level quality, but does a fantastic job managing the mood of their team, getting people emotionally engaged in what's going on, involving them maybe in the solutioning. Those ideas will outperform the ideas of the PhD level thoughts. And so just pay attention to that in your organization, because I've seen it time and time again that our ability to, you know, read the room, manage the mood, critical to our success.
Yep. Yeah. Well, and then the final component is, once you have the awareness, either with individuals or reading the room, the organizational dynamics, or even broader organization, then there's this final bucket called relationship management. And that's really the specific skills that would be very familiar to a lot of us in terms of just how we show up in relationships, in terms of our ability to coach and develop and mentor. One of my favorite competencies to work with leaders on is the competency of influence. Yeah. And a lot of times my experience is when people think about influence, that's related to a job title. And I have really grown to believe that influence is all about the essence of a person, their reputation, their authenticity, their integrity, what they're known for. And I will tell you, over the years, some of the most influential people I've seen inside organizations, very high in emotional intelligence, didn't necessarily have the biggest business card.
Yep.
And in fact, and John, maybe you've had members of your team as well like this, when there's some new idea that I was either thinking about or the broader organization was, there were certain people I would go to and just ask them the question, what do you think?
Right.
And I would love those conversations. First of all, they would shoot it to me straight. We had that kind of relationship. And it was just a great pulse check, because what they're telling me is probably very common for their colleagues and others in the organization. They're not going to give me the happy talk, kind of the bobblehead response to the boss. Yeah, boss. Yep. Oh, I love that. It's a great idea. And so those are the folks with high influence, just because of the relationships that they've established with people and who they are. Those are the folks that are going to make or break your organization in terms of making change happen.
Yeah. And by the way, as leaders, you can see who those people are on your team pretty easily. It's, you know, your example of what do you think? These are the individuals that are hosting the meeting after the meeting.
Right.
So we have the meeting and the leadership team is there and they describe the change. This is the individual that everyone's huddled up around after the meeting to say, well, Doug, what do you think about this idea? And to your points, because they carry this level of influence that's been built not through the business card, but through relationships that they've established, through successful relationship management.
Yeah.
So where do leaders kind of start with this if they want to start to flex their EI competencies and, you know, across these four buckets, self-awareness, self-management, the social awareness and social relationship management piece? Where does someone kind of begin their journey?
Well, it's a great question. And there are a variety of ways to do it, at least based on my own personal experience, and then also helping leaders gain a deeper understanding of self. And again, to your point that you mentioned earlier, it's folks that are serious about this. They understand the importance of it, and they really want to make a difference. So one of the tools, and I know both you and I have used this quite a bit over the course of the year, is the old traditional 360 assessment. And there's a wide range of emotional intelligence assessments that are out there. Again, we've talked about Dan Goleman quite a bit. Big fan of his assessments and his work. But they're out there in abundance. The assessments can vary somewhat in terms of the competencies that are used with emotional intelligence. But it's, to me, a 360 assessment process is one that you do not go into lightly. And if that's a new term to you, it's basically an assessment. And they call it a 360 because you're going and getting feedback from people all around you.
Yeah.
So in an organizational sense, it would be your leader that you report to. It would be your colleagues in the organization that you commonly work with. It would be direct reports that might report into you as a leader. It could be even other folks in the organization that have a unique interaction with you. And the other part of a 360 assessment, if you've never done one of these tools, it's critically important. You also assess yourself. You get a sense of how do I see myself on these various competencies? And then you kind of hold up your self results with how others experience you. And if you've never gone through that process, that can be exhilarating. John, is that a fair word to say 360 assessments can be exhilarating? Have you ever been exhilarated by a 360 assessment?
Someone else's, not my own.
Yeah, it's it can be eye-opening.
It's vulnerable. It's a vulnerable moment in your development.
It is. It is. So part of a 360 assessment, there's going to be things in there that are not a surprise to you because you rated yourself at a certain level and others see it at the same way. And by the way, that can be a strength thing. You know, I always thought I was kind of good at X.
Yeah.
And wow, this feedback coming back to me indicates they experience that too. Or it can be, I'm not very good at Y.
Yeah.
I've always thought, oh, and guess what? The assessment tells me that as well. To me, the even bigger challenge is when there's a disparity, especially if I think I'm pretty effective at, say, empathy, one of the key EI competencies. And the feedback I get is, oh, that's not really a strength. And it's just like, oh, what a blind spot for me. So, John, you mentioned self-awareness before. That's really what a 360 assessment is all about, is driving that in a very well-researched, intentional way with a 360 assessment that just gives you clarity around what is my starting point right now on this development journey.
Nice. Yeah, one of the things I would also recommend, you know, we talked about maybe some things that a leader needs to wrap their head around that precede your work around emotional intelligence. Get clear on your intentions. Why do I want to work on this? Is it because I've been asked? And that's, I'm not saying that that's a bad reason, that maybe you've, and this happened to me more than once, you get that tough news, that feedback that is forcing you to look in the mirror. even within those moments, is getting clear. Am I fixing this because I'm being asked to, or because I'm actually wrapping my head around this is something that's worth pursuing? I want to work on this. I'm starting to wrap my head around a belief in the benefits of having these type of relationships with people in the workplace. So getting clear on your intentions, your own why behind this, I think is an important, first step. And that knowing that, when I do take a look in this mirror, the desire to actually change some things about myself, to use that information. So I love your story and your example. I know I'm this way. Don't I get credit for that? And it's like, well, no, because you're not regulating yourself at all. How those pieces work in conjunction, you have to have the motivation to change some things about yourself. So why am I doing it? And what desire do I have to actually examine some of the behaviors I'm exhibiting and shift them for the betterment of the emotional intelligence I'm exhibiting?
Yeah.
So I want to dig in more with you, maybe in another conversation here around, more about this 360 tool, maybe some other tools we can point people to. I also know there's some informal ways to go about maybe getting some feedback around this. And then starting to wrap your head around, how do I actually put some of this into practice and develop myself? What's the process look like? Okay, I take this snapshot, I get this assessment. What happens then and where do I go from there? So I look forward to exploring that with you in our next episode. So thanks so much, Doug. What a great conversation about emotional intelligence. And thanks to all of you for tuning in. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And more to come on the topic of emotional intelligence from Doug and I. Thanks so much.